From the right of the strongest springs the exploitation of man by man, or bondage, usury, or the tribute levied upon the conquered by the conqueror, and the whole numerous family of taxes, duties, monarchical prerogatives, house rents, farm rents, etc., in one word, property. Force was followed by artifice, the second manifestation of justice, which was detested by the ancient heroes, who, not excelling in that direction, were heavy losers by it. Force was still employed, but mental force instead of physical. Skill in deceiving an enemy by treacherous propositions seemed deserving of reward. Nevertheless, the strong always prided themselves upon their honesty. In those days, oaths were observed and promises kept according to the letter rather than the spirit. As the tongue has spoken, so must the right be, says the law of the 12 tables. Artifice, or rather perfidy, was the main element in the politics of ancient Rome. Among other examples, Vico cites the following, also quoted by Montesquieu. The Romans had guaranteed to the Carthaginians the preservation of their goods and their city, intentionally using the word civitas, that is, the society, the state. The Carthaginians, on the contrary, understood them to mean the material city, urbs, and accordingly began to rebuild their walls. They were immediately attacked on account of their violation of the treaty by the Romans, who, acting upon the old heroic idea of right, did not imagine that, in taking advantage of an equivocation to surprise their enemies, they were waging unjust war. From artifice sprang the profits of manufactures, commerce, and banking, mercantile frauds and pretensions, which are honored with the beautiful names of talent and genius, but which ought to be regarded as the last degree of knavery and deception. And finally, all sorts of social inequalities. And I'm going to comment that, and this is taking us into an extended comment, that with that word pretensions, I think Proudhon asks us to recall his earlier point in the second section of the first part of chapter 5, discussed in our June 19, 2016 show that, quote, the man who is superior in strength, skill, or courage knows that he owes all that he is to society, without which he could not exist. He knows that in treating him precisely as it does the lowest of its members, society discharges its whole duty towards him. But he does not underrate his faculties. He is no less conscious of his power and his greatness, and it is this voluntary reverence which he pays to humanity. This avowal that he is but an instrument of nature, who is alone worthy of glory and worship. It is, I say, this simultaneous confession of the heart and the mind, this genuine adoration of the great being that distinguishes and elevates man and lifts him to a degree of social morality to which the beast is powerless to attain, unquote. This point that Proudhon is making necessarily brings to mind those who model the greatness that we all possess, though it may lie latent within us, those who advance us to the realization of love, the great being. And it calls to mind all the prophets of class, Socrates, Jesus, Muhammad, Shakespeare, Martin Luther King, Alice Miller, Proudhon, Popper, Prince, and countless unknown others who preserve and model in their entire being the qualities that children need to see as we advance to freedom.